It's a real pleasure for me to be here today. What I'd like to discuss is the Megillat Rut, and I want to do it on a few levels. Number one, we're in Sfirat HaOmer. It's Lag BaOmer today, and the concept of Sfirat HaOmer is counting from Yitziat Mitzrayim, from Pesach to Shavuot, the time of Matan Torah. We count from Ktzir Seorim, and we end up with Ktzir Chitim. According to the Ramban, the idea of Sfirat HaOmer is really an idea of like a Cholamoed from Yitziat Mitzrayim, from Pesach to Shavuot, which means this whole time period is really a time period of progression. We're counting up to Matan Torah, but really they're all linked, because really you have to look at Sfirat HaOmer as a kind of Chol HaMoed. And we know Chol HaMoed connects the first days of Yom Tov and the last days of Yom Tov. So the question is, why would Megillat Rut be appropriate to read on Matan Torah? So we know that on every Chag we read a Megillah. So Rut is an appropriate Megillah because on the most basic agricultural level, it really deals with Ktzir Seorim to the time of Ktzir Chitim. Megillat Rut starts with Ktzir Seorim, ends with Ktzir Chitim, so that would be a fine answer. Another idea, clearly more connected, is the idea that Rut's whole story is really as a preamble to David's Melucha, David's kingship. So Shavuot is seen as the time that David was born and died. The idea of Atzeret at that time. So David's lineage and the story of his lineage clearly is appropriate to read on Shavuot. But we know that one of the more basic ideas of Rut is the idea of really accepting all Torah, accepting the yoke of heaven. And that's really what the book of Rut is all about. What I'd like to propose today is also another aspect, is that Rut really is a way of comparing and contrasting the individual of Avraham as a convert and the persona of Rut as a convert. Usually we don't think of Megillat Rut in that sense. And what I'd like to do today is to show that many of the inferences about Rut can also be seen right within the mirror and the constraints of the story and the narrative of Avraham Avinu, which in a sense our hero of a ger who really transforms himself, right, and becomes the highest example of Yirei Hashem, right? What does Hashem tell Avraham at the Akedah? Tayadati ki Yirei Elokim ata velo chasachta et bincha et yichidcha mimeni. That the idea of Avraham in the Akedah, the idea Avraham Ivri, right? He is the ger who totally epitomizes for us total loyalty and connection to Hashem. Ruth, as the female counterpart, is really that kind of persona. She represents for us someone coming from a foreign background, right, totally transforming herself into an Ovedet Hashem. And we're going to see that this is not just a theological idea, but we're going to see it textually as well. Another thing that I'd like to really project today is the idea that we read Rut because Chazal chose Megillat Rut as the Megillah that we read on Shavuot. So actually, I'd like to start with three Midrashim about Megillat Rut, and then we're going to see in the Pshat how these ideas are really reflected, which means the concepts in the Drash, right? We're going to see how we really see textually these ideas, right, really reflected in and echoed in the text itself. So actually, we're going to start with 2, 3, and 3a for today. I have sources. I'm going to translate everything, but I definitely want to stick to the textual ideas. We have three very important midrashim that are connected with Megillat Rut. Number one, which is number two, the first one that we're going to do is in the Gemara, the Talmud Bavli, and Masechet Baba Batra, Daf Tzadi Aleph, Amud Aleph. Why are, we all basically know the story, so I'm assuming some prior knowledge. Why are Elimelech, Mahlon, Vechilion, the three individuals, the three males in the beginning of the story, why do they suffer such a terrible end right in the beginning of the story? What was their sin? So, according to Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, he says, Elimelech, Mahlon, Vechilion, Gdolei Adorayu, Uparnesei Adorayu, Umipnei Mane Enshu, Mipnei Shiatsu Me'aretz Lachutz Al Aretz. Why were they punished? Because they left Eretz Yisrael to go into the diaspora. Leaving Eretz Yisrael to go into the diaspora really is the beginning of the end, which means is the beginning of destruction. So according to this Midrash, according to Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, that's one of the major lessons, leaving Eretz Yisrael. The Gemara in Baba Batra, Daf Tzadi Aleph Amud Aleph, which is another Midrash on the same page, which discusses also Megillat Rut, says, no, that's not the main story. What's the main point of the Megillah? It's not even focusing on Elimelech, Machlon, Dechilion, because they just start the story and then we don't hear much about them. Who is the male protagonist of the story? It's really Boaz. And the Midrash says something very interesting. Boaz, right, is never mentioned in Tanakh, right, in Nevi'im. Right? We only have this mention of Boaz in Megillat Rut. Megillat Rut is the contemporary story that happens during the Book of the Judges, right? But we have no mention of Boaz in the Book of Judges. If he was such an important leader in Shevet Yehuda, in the tribe of Judah, definitely should have been mentioned. So the Midrash does something it does very often, right? It claims, right, it says that one individual's name, right, is really a nickname, right? And these two individuals are really one and the same. So the Midrash says that Iftsan is really Boaz. Iftsan, who is a judge who's mentioned, and he comes from Beit Lechem in the Book of Judges, is really Boaz. So the story that we have of Iftsan in the text in the Judges should really explain to us what is the story of Iftsan slash Boaz. And the Midrash says something very interesting. The only thing it tells us in the Book of Judges and Sefer Shoftim about Iftsan is he had 30 sons and he had 30 daughters. And he sent out the 30 daughters to get married, and now he has 30 sons and 30 daughters and sons-in-law that live in his house. That's the only thing it tells about us. So what does the Midrash say? So why is it telling us that he only cared about his immediate family? There must be some message that here we have this great judge, and the only thing they could tell us is that he made parties for his sons and parties for his daughters and sons-in-law, and he celebrated with them. So the Midrash says something very interesting. Every time he would have a party, right, he would invite everybody except this individual Manoach. Manoach is a famous individual in the Book of Judges because he had a famous son. And who was his son? Shimshon. We all know the story of Shimshon, right? Very strong individual, but he was only born after many years that the mother was barren. And the mother was barren, and all the years, right, that the mother was barren, no one cared about them. They don't have a future, they're not wealthy, they're not connected. So here the Midrash wants to say, why, right, is the story of Rut written? Not to teach us, like we saw the first idea, that leaving Eretz Yisrael brings problems, but in Eretz Yisrael, or wherever you are, wherever your community is, right, if you don't care about anyone besides the people in your immediate family or extended family, and don't care about those who are needy, right, who need you, then you really do not have a future. And what happened as a result? Because he would not care about those indigent individuals, right, and those who were not important in the community, his whole family imploded. Everyone died, right? What is the corollary in our story? Elimelech, Machlon, and Chilion. And the Midrash wants to say the same future that happened to Machlon, the Chilion, and Elimelech happened also to Boaz. Boaz originally had so many children, and he was bereft of his entire family and his wife, and that's why in the end he was able to marry Ruth, and his only future and progeny is going to be Oved. That's Midrash number two. So what is the difference between the two Midrashim? The first Midrash says, Eretz Yisrael techutz al haaretz. The second Midrash says, insularity. If you only care about yourself, right, if you're only involved with yourself, right, then you have no future, you have no continuity. The last Midrash, which is in Rut Rabbah, says that what is the critical point for Elimelech? And I'll only read the bold, right? Kach Elimelech haya migdolei ador upardasei atzibur, v'chevan shebao shnei re'avon amar, achshav kol Yisrael mesovevin al pitchi, ze bekupato, ze bekfifo, ma'asa, amad ubarach lo mipnehem. What happens in Midrash number 3? In Midrash number 3, and this is in Rut Rabbah, in Midrash number 3, something very interesting happens, right? When the famine hits, Elimelech, who is the wealthy individual of the community, leaves. Everyone is going to come to ask for tzedakah. Everyone is going to come to ask for donations. And what does he feel, right? I don't want to have this. I want to keep my fortune. He leaves thinking he's going to keep his fortune intact. And as the punishment, what happens, right? He loses his entire fortune. So why? Because he was miserly, because he only cared about himself and his immediate family. So it's very interesting that the Midrash really speaks about three points. Tzedakah, the idea of insularity and not being machnis orchim and not doing chesed. And number three, of moving from Eretz Yisrael to Chutz La'aretz, right, as opposed from Chutz La'aretz to Eretz Yisrael. What I would like to propose is that these Midrashim really show anti-Avraham Avinu. which means what was the symbol of Avraham Avinu? He comes from Haran to Eretz Yisrael. Number two, right, he is the one who is machnis orchim. He always opens in his house and invites everyone. Number three, we know the other symbol of Avraham was chesed and staka. The symbol, the message of these midrashim is that what was happening in Am Yisrael, they were losing their original Abrahamitic message. The message of Avraham Avinu, of inclusiveness, of tolerance, of tzedakah, of chesed, of caring about the other, was being lost in Am Yisrael. And what we're going to see, that the idea of Megillat Rut, is that of all people, Rut really brings it back to Am Yisrael. Again. Now let's go back to Tanakh and Jewish history. We know in the end of Sefer Breshit that we already find Lo Yasur Shevet Miyuda. We know that originally in the book of Genesis, right, in Sefer Breshit, when we talk about the blessings, the brachot for Yehuda, right, it claims, right, Lo Yasur Shevet Miyuda u'mechokek miben raglav ad ki avoshi lo v'lo yikatamim. What does that mean? The scepter shall never veer from Judah. What's the implication? The implication is that leadership will always be in the tribe of Judah. If leadership should always be in the tribe of Judah, then I want to see that Moshe Rabbeinu was from Judah. He wasn't. He was from Levi. I want to see that all the leaders in the book of Judges should have been from the tribe of Judah, but they weren't, which means why is there such a lag of time, right? There's such a time lag between the promise that Judah is going to be the real leader of Am Yisrael and eventually, right, the actual appointment of someone from the tribe of Judah as king. Why do we have that hiatus? Really, what should have happened, right? Joshua should have been from the tribe of Judah. He's not. Moses, right? Shmuel, we have a huge time lag. We even go through the King Saul before we reach David. And the question is why? What is happening during that interim time period where we have this great blessing and yet we don't have the fruition of this blessing? And what I'd like to show that even though in Tanakh in general we have blessings, we have promise of leadership, right, you have to earn it in Tanakh. And number two, what we see is that leaders really undergo tremendous transformations. They are imperfect. We don't expect them to be perfect. Anyone who's a perfect leader is never successful. But the key to every leader is that he has a crisis and then he's able to overcome the crisis. For example, the whole transformation of Yehuda, of Judah himself, comes through the idea that he sells Joseph, he sells Yosef, then he separates from his brothers, and it's actually Tamar who rejuvenates him and really is able to bring him back to the fold. So we actually expect our leaders to go through a crisis. David as well goes through several crises, but the key is to be able to admit your mistake and to be able to go on. And that is the crucible of leadership, right? What do you do when there is a crisis? How do you deal with it? And how do you move on? So that's what I'd like to see today in our Megillah. Number one, the idea of comparing Ruth and Abraham. Number two, the idea, what are the elements of leadership that we are really expecting from the leaders of Am Yisrael, and especially to focus textually. How is this really emphasized textually in this very nice Megillah? And I want to start with a question. Really, we could have called this either Megillat Boaz, because he is definitely a protagonist. We could have called it Megillat Naomi, because she's a heroine who exists from the beginning to the end of the story, and usually in Tanakh we like to pick titles by the heroes or heroines who really span the entire story and play a major role. And yet what we find is that we're calling this Megillat Rut, just like we call Megillat Esther, Megillat Esther, even though really a good pick would have been Megillat Mordechai, because he, again, starts from the beginning as an active individual and ends with, still is important in the end, and he's the one who's mentioned in the end as the great leader. But why do we call one Megillat Esther and one Megillat Rut? Because they're the catalyst in the story. And what we're going to see with Megillat Rut is that she's the catalyst in the story. And that's why it's really called Megillat Rut, because she makes everything happen. Naomi loses her chance to be called, to have the Megillah in her name, because she is not really the catalyst from beginning to end in the story. So now we can begin with number one. So we're in Rut Perek Aleph. And again, with all the ideas that we have, we're going to look through some of the themes and ideas. We're number one. Vayhi b'nei shvot ha-shoftim, vayhi ra'av ba'aretz, vayelech ish mi bet lechem yudah lagur bizde mo'av, hu v'ishto u'shnei banav. We have no names. right, this generic leader. And the question is, Vayhi bimei Shvat HaShoftim, we know it's in the time of the judges, there's no king yet, because this is the preamble to kingship. Vayhi ra'av ba'aretz, the minute there's a famine in the land, what does Elimelech do? Boom. Vayelech ish mi beit lechem Yehuda, he leaves. It doesn't even tell us it's a heavy famine. It doesn't tell us that there are negotiations. It doesn't tell us any activities that he does. The minute there's a problem, he leaves. He leaves Eretz Yisrael, and he goes to Zde Moav, and he only goes with his nuclear family. In Tanakh, we never have a nuclear family. There's no such thing as a nuclear family. When Avraham Avinu goes down to Mitzrayim, he goes with his whole entourage. He takes everybody with him. The fact that Elimelech just leaves with his nuclear family shows that he only cares about himself. This idea of just caring about yourself in a way that's extremely selfish in Tanakh. Not only that, right, only in Pasuk Bet does it tell us his name. And what does Elimelech mean? He had the potential to be king, Elimelech. Here's a man who has potential to be king. If he stays in Eretz Yisrael and is able to withstand the Ra'av, the famine, he will be able to be successful. Right, he'd be able to do something, galvanize the people, maybe do some kind of revolution in Am Yisrael that afterwards, right, everyone will see that he has the potential and he has the leadership abilities. But instead, he decides to leave. And it says, Vayavoz de Moav Vayusham. Even after he's there, he stays there. Even after he has a chance to think about it, right, he remains in Moav. Number two, if we compare again, because we're doing the Avraham comparison, when Avraham's Ra'av is introduced to us, when his famine is introduced to us, it says, Vayhi Ra'av Kaved, it's a heavy famine. And when he goes down to Mitzrayim, he takes everybody from his entourage with him. Which means when he goes down, and he goes there only for a short time, because he's trying to wait out the Ra'av in Eretz Yisrael, right, Avraham anyway has an experience of being out of Eretz Yisrael, coming to Eretz Yisrael and leaving. But Elimelech was born in Eretz Yisrael. He's already the new generations in Eretz Yisrael. His loyalty should have been to Eretz Yisrael. And yet, as Avraham goes out, comes back into Eretz Yisrael, and moves back, we have Elimelech only going in one direction. He comes from Eretz Yisrael, and he leaves. Now, who would we expect, right, if she played any important role in the family to make an impact? Naomi. Naomi doesn't say a word. Which means this is also a famous rubric that we have in Tanakh, where the women really start out as being passive. Esther doesn't say anything for the several first prakim and all of Megillat Esther. Right? Chana's only crying and screaming, but we don't have any constructive words coming out of her mouth for the first few psukim until she realizes that she has to take action. So too Naomi. We expected more from her. She's the wife. We many times in Tanakh have the wife giving good advice. She is the one who really encourages certain directions, certain ideas, and yet she's mute. She just follows her husband and her sons, and she doesn't say anything. Even after her husband dies, right, who become the main leaders of the family? The sons. She doesn't even step in then. Vayamat Elimelech, we're in Pasuk Gimel, Ish Naomi, Vatisha'er Hiyushnei Baneah. She's left with just her sons, and yet she doesn't play a role. She totally abdicates her leadership responsibilities to her sons. And not only that, the sons get married to non-Jewish women, she does not say a word, and they stay there for 10 years. Again, the reference to Avraham. When Avraham and Sarah stay in Canaan for 10 years, who makes the decision that something has to happen? Sarah. She brings Hagar. She makes the decision that the future of Am Yisrael, our future, has to change. And yet, Naomi doesn't do a thing. Vayamutu gam shnehem. When her sons die, vatisha'er. She's left bereft from her sons and her husbands. What we see very interestingly here, right, it keeps on saying vatisha'er, vatisha'er. She's left, she's left, she's left. She's a totally passive situation. Only later, right, when does she take action? V'takam hi v'chaloteh. When does she take action? We're number one, Pasuk Vav. Ki pakad Hashem et amo latet lahem lechem. When she finds out there's bread in Eretz Yisrael, she gets up and leaves. Which means when she finds out Hashem's doing his job, then she comes back to Eretz Yisrael. And we know that according to her age and the speeches that she gives, I didn't do all the psukim for you, that she just wants to come back to be buried. She wants to come back to have a Jewish burial, because what does she have in Moav? She really wants to leave the daughters-in-law in Moav and really just come to Eretz Yisrael to be buried, because that's really her homeland. She's not thinking of doing anything constructive, active, anything transformational. But ki fakad Hashem et amo latet lahem lechem. And this is another theme that we're going to see. The problem in Megillat Rut is that everyone is expecting God to always take action, which means no one sees that their hishtadlut, or their actions, right, are really going to change things. As opposed to Avraham, constantly we see Avraham is being tested because his actions are going to make the difference in the future of Am Yisrael. But what we see here is that Mahlon v'Chilion and Elimelech, whose job is it to bring the rain? Whose job is it to bring the thing? Whose job is it to take care of everybody? We're going to see ki fakad Hashem et amo. It's only in Hashem's hands. And what we saw with Avram Avinu was one of the great things of Avram Avinu is that he was proactive. The Ish went out, did chesed, right? Was machnis orchim, wanted to teach people about Shem Hashem. That was his role as going out and around. So we're number four, because we did the Midrashim before, right? We all know the story of the two daughters-in-law, Orpah and Ruth, right? And they go with her, right? They leave with her till a certain amount, and finally they both cry, and Orpah kisses her goodbye. And this is an interesting piece about Orpah. Of course, what's her name? Orpah, nape of the neck, which means from the beginning, what are we expecting from Orpah? To turn back. But why are we expecting her to turn back? Again, in Tanakh, names are very symbolic. Another cute one, but again, only if you're into these kind of things. Orpah, at least, works. Ruth is really Torah backwards, and you just add a hey, like Ruth HaMoavia, but that's a throwaway. That's not really up my alley. What?
Was Orpah backwards?
No, Orpah's not. It's just the nape of the neck. Meaning that's why I'm saying it's a better it's a better illusion. But the point with Orpah is Orpah and Ruth come from what?
One comment is it's not a throwaway though to say that Ruth and Yisro are connected or make that connection.
Oh,
yeah, same one there except for
Yud. Right. Same idea, a convert coming into Am Yisrael. I just don't want to get so sidetracked, but thank you. The idea of Orpah is very interesting because Orpah and Ruth really come from what lineage? They come from Moab. Who is really the progenitor of Moab and Ammon? It's Lot. And what's the whole symbol of Lot? Lot only comes with Abraham part of the way, but cannot really go all the way with Abraham. He always turns back. Right? He can't really be committed all the way to Am Yisrael. So Lot is the symbol of coming part way and then turning back. Who's Orpah? Orpah is several generations further on from Lot. So in a sense, Ruth is really a tikkun for Lot. Lot who goes with Avraham part of the way, right? We have here Orpah going part of the way, right? So she'll get some zuchut for that, but Ruth is really the symbol of the tikkun for Lot. Really originally, when Avraham leaves Haran, who does he come with? He comes with Lot. Lot is his brother-in-law. Lot is Sarah's brother, which means Lot is really interested in coming part of the way, but all the time in their history, every time it comes to the crucial idea of committing 100%, Lot can't commit 100%, Orpah can't commit 100%. What's beautiful about Ruth is that she is able to commit 100%. So again, we're tying ourselves all the way back to Avraham, where Avraham is the one who comes with Lot into Eretz Yisrael and really tries to be together, but at the end says, Hiparedna me'alai. What is Ruth, what is Naomi saying to Ruth and Orpah? Separate from me. I can't keep you anymore. And yet what does Ruth insist? She's sticking with her. Verut davkaba. She really wants to cleave on to Naomi. And what is Naomi really the symbol for here? Naomi is really the symbol for Hashem. And again, the illusions. Look in Pasuk Yutet, number four, Pasuk Yutet. Vatelachna shtehem ad bo'ana beit lechem. What is the famous symbol that we have of Abraham and Yitzchak going to the Akedah? Vayelchu yachdav, vayelchu shnehem yachdav. What do we have here? Vateilachna shtehem. Which means, really, this is the big test for Naomi and Ruth. Because when Naomi's bringing back Ruth, remember, Ruth is an albatross on Naomi's neck. Which means no one wants Ruth. She's a Moaviyah. Why is she coming back? No one's going to accept them. No one's going to accept Naomi. Because why did she leave? She wasn't interested in taking care of Bnei Israel when they were in trouble, and she left and turned her back on them, and now she wants to come and really enjoy their largesse. What's going to be their response? We see very clearly what their response is. Look in Pasukaf, still on number four. Vatomer Alehem, Al Tikren Ali Naomi. Everyone is coming out to see them, right? Hazot Naomi, right in Pasukaf. They're all looking, right? Yutet. Okay, everyone wants to see, right? Everyone is curious. Naomi's coming back after all these years, and she's coming with Ruth. Everyone's coming out. Vatehom kol ha'ir, vatomar nehazot Naomi. And Naomi answers back, don't be so excited, right? Kir en li mara, ki hemar shadai li ma'od. What is Naomi's answer? Hashem made my life bitter, which means, again, the problem in Megillat Ruth is that everyone's blaming Hashem. Hashem brought the famine. Hashem has to cure the famine. Here, I had a bitter life. It's not because I left or I didn't fill my responsibility. Who's really responsible? Hashem. Now, of course, Hashem is responsible for everything in our lives, and we want to see ourselves, of course, all in the Hashkacha of Hashem. right in Hashem's providence. But on the other hand, what is also our responsibility? Hishtadlut, which means we have to do our part, our hishtadlut, to make things happen. And that is the intersection of life. What's happening here? Naomi is saying everything it's Hashem's fault. Yeah, look at the language, right? Don't call me kiheimar shakai limod. Hashem made my life bitter. She says, anim le'ah halachti. I went full, v'reikam heshivani Hashem. Which means I went full and Hashem brought me back empty. Empty in every way. She's old, she can't have a future, she has no money. And again, siduk hadin is very important, saying that God is responsible. But on the other hand, here she's saying in a way that relieves her of any responsibility. And that's the problem. What else does she say? Again, she says it. Al tikren ali Naomi, v'Hashem anabi v'shakai herali, which means it's all Hashem's fault. Hashem made my life bitter. And that's true. Tziduk HaDin is wonderful here. But on the other hand, pretty much, what is she saying? It's not my fault. I left you, I didn't give staka, I didn't take responsibility. Nothing is my fault, so you can't blame me. So the women also respond in the same way. If you don't do your part, I'm not going to do my part. What is their response? Right? V'teshev Naomi v'rut ha'moavia. They stay there in the time that the sorim, the barley harvest is starting. Does anyone come and give them tzedakah? No. They are so bereft that they have to go and collect in the fields. If people brought them in as machnis orchim, so again, this is the theme, which means what is the symbol of Abraham? Hachnasat orchim, chesed, caring about others, fulfilling your communal responsibility. And yet, what kind of community is Naomi coming back to? We understand. They're all taking revenge. But on the other hand, what's the answer? No one is taking responsibility. Not even the great leader of that generation. And this ties into that midrash, right? Just keep that in the back of your mind. In the beginning of Perek Bet, who is mentioned? Naomi says, you know, we have a great relative here, Boaz. So again, what would you expect? You would expect Boaz to bring them in, take care of them. He's the family relations. And he doesn't. They have to collect in the fields. So much so that Ruth says, I'm going to collect in the field, and then I'm going to find favor in his eyes. What should we expect? Who should have gone out and really brought them in? Boaz, he's a family member. He should have responsibility. Now, we have a very interesting midrash says no, because he didn't want to give them open tzedakah and they should collect in the fields. But again, who mandated that you have to get tzedakah and you collect it at the end of the field? Hashem. So again, who's really directly providing for Ruth and Naomi? It's really Dvar Hashem and the tzedakah, but Boaz is not taking a step out. But another point that I want to make here, who is the catalyst and who is the one who's saying, okay, I'm going to make an effort to do something and collect? It's Ruth. She's the catalyst of the story. Naomi wants to come to die when she says Hashem made it bitter. She makes no plans. The only one who's making plans here is Ruth. Vatomer Ruth ha'moaviyah. She says, I'm going to find favor in his eyes. And what does she do? Gimel, vatelech, vatavo, vatilaket. We always know in Tanakh, when you have three proactive verbs, one after the other, it shows that this person is really transforming and trying to make an effort. We have it with Esther, we have it with Chana, we have it with Esav in the other direction. So we see that she is really transforming and really moving the story ahead. So let's go to number 6 in Perek Bet. She's collecting in the fields, and all of a sudden Boaz happens on her when he sees her in the field. Again, Vayiker Mikre. It just so happened that she comes to the field, right, in Pasuk Gimel, of Elimelech. And Rashi says, Hashem really made it happen that she would go to the field, of Boaz. Which means she really wanted to find Boaz's field, but Hashem made it happen right away. But it wasn't that Boaz invited her originally. But when Boaz meets her, what does he say? We're in number 6, we're in Ruth Perek Beth, Pasuk Yud Aleph. When Boaz meets her, he says, you know what? I was told all the things that you did to your mother-in-law, Achrei Moti Shech. Which means, what's the first thing he's impressed with? You have to understand, Mahlon and Chilion had no children. Ruth did not have any children with her husband. So there's no blood connection, there's no sanguine connection between Naomi and Ruth. And yet she's still nice to her mother-in-law, right? Her mother-in-law who's not trying to help her in any way or get her any future, right? So where originally, right, Ruth is Naomi's albatross, now Ruth has to find food not only for herself, but also for her mother-in-law. So that's number one. So again, what is this first idea, that she's so nice to her mother-in-law, even though she can't get anything from her, is the idea of chesed. That's the idea of Avraham, going out and caring for others, even though you might not get anything from it. On the second thing, he says, and I'm so impressed, v'tazvi avich v'imech v'eretz moladetech, v'telchi el am asher lo yadat mol shilshom. What language is this? Lech lecha me'artzecha v'moladcha v'beit avicha la'aretz asher areka. Which means he's using the same language that we use for Avraham Avinu. Which means you left your ancestral homeland in order to come here. So again we have this allusion to Avraham Avinu. She's the female Avraham Avinu. Leaving everything that she knows to come to an area, right, that she knows nothing about, and yet she is really trying to make her mark here. And what is his answer? What should have been his answer? I'm going to take you into my house. I am going to make sure to take care of you. And yet he answers her, Yishalem Hashem Po'alech. Who should pay you back for everything that you're doing? Hashem. Which means it's not my responsibility to take a responsibility or give you tzedakah or do anything. Yishalem Hashem Po'alech. V'tehi maskuratech shleima me'im Hashem. If you didn't chap what he's saying, he says Hashem should pay you back. He's saying v'hi maskuratech. What's maskoret? Salary, which means, and the actual payment should only be from Hashem, which means if you didn't get me the first time, he's saying, get my message a second time. You're not getting a penny out of me, right? But Hashem will take care of you, right? Asher bat lachasot tachat knafav. Again, whose wings did you come under? Hashem. You came under Hashem's wings, so who should take care of you? Hashem should take care of you. He's making it very clear. And she's saying, no, you don't understand me. Vatomer emtzachen be'enecha, Aduni. I want to find favor in your eyes. I want to make sure you do something for me. Kini chamtani v'chi dibarta alef shitchatecha. It's very nice you're saying all these comforting words. Va'anochi lo yekechat shitchatecha. Don't give me the same phrases. Don't throw out the same jargon that you're throwing out to everyone else. Don't give me the same speech you're giving everybody else. Which means, what is Ruth doing? She has to mix things up. Things have to change in Am Yisrael. Everyone only cares about themselves. No one cares. Forget about the stranger. Ruth is a stranger. But they don't even care about the individuals right around themselves. It's a very insular community. So, what happens, right? And that's it. She goes, collects in the fields, and he says, follow my na'arim. Follow the boys in the field. Because what does he want to do? She'll find a good husband, she'll find one of the boys, but clearly, what does he want? It's not my responsibility, you're collecting the fields, take whatever you want, but he's not going to be proactive about it. Finally, when she comes home, right, Naomi says, we're number seven, right, Naomi says, no, don't go with the Na'arim, don't follow the boys, you only go after the girls. Because what all of a sudden does Naomi realize? What is their potential in Ruth? There's a potential for a future. There's a potential to come back with the family, which means what Ruth was able to do was, till now, Naomi is totally passive and not interested in making decisions and seeing the future. Ruth was able to change Naomi's perspective, that now Naomi is willing to think about the future, that there are future prospects for Ruth, that there are future prospects for Naomi, that she didn't just come to Eretz Yisrael to die. So Ruth is really changing the story. Number one, she's already given a hint to Boaz that he has to change his opinion. She's already changing, right, the whole idea, right, at least Naomi's idea that she really can stay passive. So now we're going to go to Ruth Perek Gimel, we're number eight. So what happens? Vatomer la, la Naomi chamota, biti. Halo avakesh lach manoach asher yitav lach. What happens already by Perek Gimel? Now all of a sudden Naomi is making plans asher yitav lach. What, now she's saying, I want to do something that's going to be totally good just for you. Which means she is going to do something beneficial. Remember, if Ruth gets married, what happens to Naomi? She could be left alone. Ruth could leave her. She'll have kids on her own. And now Naomi is going to be left alone. But Naomi is still willing to do that idea of chesed for Ruth, to have a future for Ruth, which means asher yitav lach, which means now Naomi is willing to do something as a chesed for someone else that actually might backfire to her because she realizes it's good for the other person. Just like Ruth was willing to take care of her mother-in-law even though there's no connection there, and it could also be detrimental to herself. What does she need her right for? So what we see here is that each one's helping of the other in the end really helps the other, but that's not what is really projected to begin with. You know, lots of times you do a good deed for someone else and originally you're really going out of your way and it's a terrible thing ever, but in the end you really gain from it. But really, when you did the deed, you only did it for that other person. You know, whatever you gained in the end is something else. So what's fascinating about this person is, like, you know, do a good deed, a random good deed, and in the end it's going to boomerang back. That's really what Ruth is about. Which means, don't always think when you do a chesed, you're always planning, I'm going to get brownie points for this, everything is going to work out. Sometimes you do the chesed just because it's the right thing to do, and that's also what Ruth is about. And don't be so, you know, sure that you can just take care of yourself and not care about others, and there will be no ramifications about that.
At the risk of stealing future thunder, a little bit of connection.
Excellent, okay? Part of the reason the Midrash uses the idea of Manoach is because it's in the text, in the story itself, right? Avakesh lach Manoach, thank you, right? Asher yitav lach, right? So if you want, what, right, what could be? Elimelech, Ivtzan, Boaz, what will happen in the end, right? They could all end up really being insignificant, right, in the future story of history, but again, the language of Manoach. So what does she say? She says, look, Boaz is in the goren. He's in the barn that night. Why? Because they collected all the barley. When they collect all the barley, right, then you usually have a party. What does she say? And look at the Kri Echtiv here. It's very interesting. Number one, he is collecting the barley halayla. Also, what's the symbolism of layla? Night, right? When everything is dark, right? When was Gulat Mitzrayim Vayhi? B'chatzi halayla, which means when you think things are darkest and things are at their worst and things are at their nadir, really, right? That's the time when things flip around and you can all of a sudden get up to something as great as the height and apex of Am Yisrael. So she says, he's Zoret Goren Asorim Halayla. And what should you do? You get yourself beautiful and go down to the Goren. But look at the language in Pasuk Gimel and Dalid, right? What is the Kri and what is the Chtiv? The Kri and what is the Chtiv, right? What do we see? Really, she says, you should get dressed, you should go down. But the Chtiv, the original language, is that she's saying, I should go down. I should be there, which means, really, who should be doing all these things? Naomi herself. She can't. Right, so she's sending Rut as an extension of herself. But also, what does this show? That now Naomi sees Rut as an extension of herself. That kind of connection between these two women. Because what did Rut tell her originally? Batsher telchi elech, ubasher talini alin, elokayech elokai. Which means Rut made that first connection of Berut Davkaba to cleave onto Naomi. And now we see that Naomi is willing to do it for Rut, even though if Rut gets what she wants, she could leave Naomi in the dust and she's going to die old and wrinkled all by herself. Okay, Pasuk Dalet, which we know is a great fear. That's why Naomi came to Eretz Yisrael, because she just wanted to be buried among the Jews. Pasuk Dalet. What happens, right? She says, what happens in the middle of the night? V'hu yagid lach et asher tasin. He'll tell you exactly what to do. And Ruth says, okay, everything you tell me I'm going to do. And she does whatever her mother-in-law tells her. Pasuk Zayin. Vayochal boaz vayesht vayitav libo vayavol ishkav. So the party is happening, the harvest festival, right, for the barley. And Boaz is eating, drinking, he's happy, and he goes to sleep. What is so fascinating about Pasuk Zayin? Usually when there's a festival, what is it? It's usually a communal harvest. A lot of people get together. A lot of people feast. So what is happening? Who's only partying in Boaz's party? Himself. He's going to sleep himself. He's eating himself. He's drinking himself. Which means in this kind of party, what is it if you have a harvest? Especially we know there was a terrible famine in Am Yisrael. There was a terrible famine in Am Yisrael. So what should be your reaction? Bring other people in. Care about others. But we see this idea of caring about yourself is still very guarded here. So what happens, and this is the pièce de résistance, and we're going to finish in a few minutes. What happens at this evening when she reaches him? Look at Pasuk Chet. When does this happen? Vayhi b'chatzi alayla. The same idea of Geula happens b'chatzi alayla. So too, when Ruth is going to speak to Boaz, b'chatzi alayla, this is going to be the transformation of all Am Yisrael. And what does she tell him? You know, when he sees her, he's shocked, right? He's horrified. And Pasuk Ted, he says, Miat, who are you? And of course he knows her. He sees her in the field all the time. He knew her whole lineage and her whole background and her whole story before. In Tanakh, whenever you say Miat, it's mean, okay, what do you want? Meaning, what do you represent? Just like Shaul as David after he kills Goliath, who are you? We know he was in Nosek Kelim. He was with him all the time. What does she say? Anochi Rut Amatecha. And this is it. Ufarasta Knafecha al Amatecha ki Goelata. Which means, what did he tell her originally? Who should spread his wings upon her, Hashem. And what does she say? That was the wrong answer. Bing! Right? She comes in the middle of the night, she frightens him, she puts him on the spot, and she says, you know what? Ufarasta knafecha ala matecha ki goelata. You have to spread your wings on me because you are the Redeemer. And not only the idea of the Redeemer, you're a close relative, so since they couldn't be Yibum because there's no dead brother, you're the closest relative, we call that geula redemption. You could redeem just me. It's ambiguous. There's a double entendre here. You could be the redeemer of all Am Yisrael. You have the potential to care about others, to spread your wings about others, to give tzedakah to others. If you just look outwardly and not just inwardly, if you transform yourself, in a sense, to Avraham Avinu, who opened his tent to everybody, you have the potential, right, to also reawaken that whole idea in Shevet Yehuda, the tribe of Judah, that was asleep all these generations because they only cared about themselves. So Ruth not only opens the door to the basic Avraham values, she opens the door for the David idea of kingship, Judah values, right, that he has the potential for the geula. And what does he say? He gives her a bracha. He says, hey, taft chastecha acharon min arishon. This chesed is even greater than not going after the young men in the field, that you're, number one, willing to marry me, and number one, realize that you have given me a new lease on life, a new lease on a future. So here is a person, right, who really is not taking his responsibility seriously originally in the story, and we see that Ruth is able to galvanize his focus and his action. So we see that Ruth is able to come back by her own initiative. She's totally self-motivated. Number two, we see that she really awakens Naomi. And number three, we see that she totally awakens Boaz. And as a result, in Perek Dalid, we see when she is married, finally, right, the negotiations are done, and she's going to marry Boaz, she's identified with three famous women. Number one, with Rachel and Leah. We put her on the level of the Imahot, of the matriarchs. And number two, we also put her on the level of Tamar, because what was Tamar's greatness? Tamar also awakened Yehuda to realize his responsibility and to realize that he has responsibilities beyond himself. And in the end, what we see is that we end the story that Boaz, because of Ruth, was able to have Oved, who was able to have Yishai, who gave birth to David. And in the end of the story, we see that Ruth reawakens Naomi, and we almost don't find Ruth's name in the end of the story. And what is that? Because she was also willing to do chesed shelemet. She didn't do this chesed in order to plaque her name on the billboards. Really, she was willing to do it to revive Naomi, to revive Boaz. And even though her name is not mentioned in the end of the story, how do Chazal decide to name the book? Megillat Ruth. Because she really is the main source of this rejuvenation for Am Yisrael, the turn back to Abraham values, the turn back to Yehuda values, the turn back to kingship, of chesed, of tzedakah, of caring for others. So again, what other great message can we have for the time of Shavuot and Kabbalat HaTorah, that the whole idea of Omer is the idea of giving, of tzedakah, of harvest, and our focus on others beyond ourselves, right? That also family, of course, is important, but community and our responsibility to others and the idea of chesed, right, is really a very important element. And that's why, right, when we end with the Ktzir Chitim, when we end with Shnei HaLechem on Shavuot, it's really the idea of Mincha Chadasha LaHashem, the idea of Matana and of chesed and of giving of ourselves. So in addition to the idea of Keter Torah, we have the idea of Keter Gemilut Chasadim and Tzedek U'Mishpat. Thanks a lot.